If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
There you go.
It winds from Chicago to LA.
Sure I've ever heard the original.
What pier is that? That 66 is that Santa Monica Pier?
Yeah.
66 ends.
Yeah.
66 ends.
I said San Francisco one time, and I had to get corrected for like 4 months from listeners.
Oh, I bet you did. I bet you did.
It's
yes.
Stuck.
Yes. Yes. Route 66, just one of the many iconic travel routes that brought people into the West, and one of the little routes like so many other routes that they had, the Natchez Trace route, which is one down through the South that's real famous, and the one that runs along the top of the Appalachian Skyline Drive.
Blue Ridge. Blue Ridge,
yes, Blue Ridge, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So many beautiful routes, but historic Route 66 in Arizona.
So what a great road to travel on. Now, you mentioned the interstate highway system. And Interstate 10 overlays a lot of the old Route 66. When you get outside of Flagstaff going towards Kingman, you can take a detour off and go to Valentine, I think it's around Seligman or so,
right.
And come back around and then re-catch the 10 to get a little
20.
Bit. Pardon me?
20. Interstate 20.
Okay. To go
through Flag.
To Flag.
40.
40.
40.
40. We're going to get it right.
I've never heard of 20, but my mind,
20,
my
20,
mind is...
20 leaves 10 somewhere around Fort Stockton and goes to Dallas.
Yeah.
Right.
40 comes across.
40 comes through. Yes. Okay. So it's Interstate 40. I'm thinking 10 because I live in Phoenix and I try to avoid the 10 all the time. That's traffic and weather. That'll be next hour. The interstate overlaid the highway system when President Eisenhower comes back from World War II. He saw the value of an interstate system, the Autobahn system, and how it had really helped Germany basically move materials, move troops, move things around their country in order to be responsive to the dangers of war. So we're going into the Cold War. We've got two really big exposed coasts. How can we get troops and tanks and things from one side to the other? The interstate highway system was designed to... as a Cold War military measure. That's why it's a divided highway. It's specified at a certain width, certain elevation grades, because it's accommodating moving troops. You could take and evacuate Los Angeles one direction while you're moving troops and things in the other direction. So the interstate highway system is that designed that way. But it's also, as a side effect, was a business thing. It encouraged tourism in the great age of automobiles, as Ford and GM and Chrysler are putting out their big touring cars, their Bel Airs and their Fairlanes and all those things. People are wanting to get on the road. It was part of the culture. Get out there and see America, put the family in the car, drive, and you get all these great places to go along the way.
Stuckey's.
Motels, Stuckey's.
Get your pecan log roll at Stuckey's.
Wigwam Motel, the Log Cabin Motel, the Space Age Motel. You get roadside diners. You get all these different kind of places to kind of help enrich that experience. And it, again, touches the same ones that we did in the 1920s and 30s. The Painted Desert, the Petrified Forest, the Grand Canyon. All of that was to encourage people to see America, have pride in America, and then America responded by making it such a great experience.
It was. And then we have this whole movement through the 60s and 70s, and then we have this oil embargo.
Right.
You know where I was for the oil embargo? Delta, Colorado, trying to get home. We had to wait a day and a half for that filling station to get gas.
To get gas.
To fill up our little Datsun B210 station wagon.
I've driven from Phoenix to Dallas in a B210. A small little car. But the gas crisis of the 1973-1974, not only did it make auto traveling different, but it also changed how cars were made. And no longer do you have the big luxurious comfortable touring cars. Everything became an economy car, and nobody wants to ride 500 miles or 1,000 miles in an economy car.
driving 55 miles an hour
to save gas. That whole the Highway Speed Act, which regulated for conservation purposes the speed limit and whatnot, but and would withhold federal funds if you didn't impose a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Now, speaking of a federal fund, isn't the reason I-10 went to the three lanes is anything that's not three lanes on an interstate loses funding?
I don't know.
Federal funding to the state for that stretch. I think that's why they had to do Tucson in such a rush, is they were trying to get that three lanes before the deadline. And you can see they left that little tiny stretch at Picacho.
Yeah. Well, a lot, you know, and a lot of that's been expanded recently. We need to call our – that's who we need to have on is Doug Nitzel and find out why I-17 between Phoenix and Flagstaff is a rutted wagon train road. There are dirt roads in Arizona that are in better shape than the road between Phoenix and Flagstaff.
Yeah, there are portions of that road that I'm not driving in the right lane. It's just too rough. I'm going to get in the left lane, even if I'm not going in the fastest, because the right lane is
safer. You're that guy. So you're that guy.
You get outside.
You can't blame him for that on 17, though.
You get outside of New River, and that road is pretty rough, going from New River through Bumblebee and stuff. It's just they need to pave that, put the rubberized stuff on it.
But can you imagine how that's going to clog up travel? I mean, you get an accident on I-17 north of Newark, Black Canyon City. People are stuck for half a day.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to pave that.
Well, it's an odd area to put a road because you've got to climb mountains and go through valleys, and it's not something that's really naturally done. There's not a good natural fit like the roads that run east-west across Arizona do. And so it's a huge undertaking, and because it probably wouldn't be part of the federal system home solely, it'd have to have matching state support to do that. Even though it's an interstate highway, you'd have to have matching state support.
Now, right here in Arizona, what are some of the roadside attractions you've driven by 1,000 times and never pulled into?
I'm a sucker. I'll pull into them. So I remember as a kid going to Bedrock, Arizona, the Grand Canyon, the Flintstone Village.
Yes.
That was a really fun place. Some of the roadside trading posts, Two Guns, Arizona, Two Arrows, Arizona, is always kind of a fun place.
Trading posts earlier, you know, and there are some great trading posts.
Right, and that, what a great way to introduce Native American arts and crafts, the really high quality work to people, and the selections are great. The price is always good, and it's a great place to stop. And if you've got a family with kids, there's something for everybody in a place like that.
I bet you I drove by the Meteor Crater. Well, I drove by the Meteor Crater probably 30 years, just thinking, what kind of gimmick trap is that? And when we finally bit the bullet, I wore sunglasses and a hat so people would recognize me. So I was thinking, I'm gonna play the sucker here, and I'm gonna go in there and I'm gonna see. That is a fantastic roadside.
It is
destination.
It's amazing, and you can do the Meteor Crater and the eastern part of, again, the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert. Awesome, beautiful. Or you could do Meteor Crater and do Sunset Crater. Just outside of Flagstaff, Walnut Canyon. We drove by Walnut Canyon many times and never stopped there. And finally, my wife and I hiked.
That's a nice little hike.
You go down, I think it's 700 steps down, which means it's 600, 700 steps up, right? kind of a thing. But that's a one that we pass by a lot. I've taken students to the Titan Missile Museum down in outside of Tucson.
Yes.
That's a great one. And San Javier is not too far, so some of our Spanish.
Now, while you're down in that neighborhood, have you ever piled your students into a Grand Canyon University authorized bus and gone to see the thing?
No, we haven't seen the thing. I'm trying to get it to maybe do a road trip down to see Tombstone.
Well, you'd be right there.
Yeah, because it's very close by.
Have you ever stopped to see the thing?
No, my dad once, when we were driving from here to Kentucky, we're not stopping there. We got to get to Big Springs, Texas, like Ottawa. There's a hamburger place there that he really liked. So we're getting to Big Springs.
At Big Springs.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We're not stopping. We're going.
I don't know that I've ever seen the thing. Have we seen the thing? Did we stop there one time?
On a trip to Louisiana, you let a couple of us, because it's just a gas station, and then the thing is something you have to pay to go inside and see. And you did let a few of us that were curious enough, you gave us a couple bucks to go
So walk can through. You share the secret?
Do you think it's that?
What is it? I didn't go in. I don't remember seeing it.
Is that ruining their business model if I spoil it?
Well, you've got all those billboards for 40 miles either direction directing you to stop there. What are you going to see? What is the, is it? A couple questions. Is it alive?
No. It's a pretty hokey, cheesy half wax museum, half junkyard collection of like old wagons and this is back when we were going to Louisiana. So this is 20-year-old information.
Yeah.
The thing could change every year. You never know.
It could.
That's true.
But, yeah, it was. They got us for a couple bucks. I'll tell you that.
All right. Dr. Dean.
Yes, sir.
I know you are a fan of a particular car. I've rebuilt. I think you have two of them?
Two of them, yes.
Yes. Are they... One's a convertible?
One's a convertible, one's a coupe, okay. And both of them are 1965 Chevrolet Corvairs.
Okay. And so what road trips, you put your sunglasses on and your little driving cap and y'all
the
put
dream,
the top down? And
the dream drive is to come down through the Salt River Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay.
Which my students, when we came down last year, I took some students up to Fort Apache, and we were coming down through there. And they were quick to point out all the cars on the sides of the cliff that have gone over. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that'd be great to bring my Corvair down.
Oh.
And the road kind of cleared and just let it rip. That's a dream one. One of my favorite road drives is to do the loop up to Sedona, come back through Jerome and Prescott,
okay.
People's Valley,
okay.
Wickenburg, and then back down. I think that's one of my favorites. People's Valley, and you kind of hit that sundown. It's really just spectacular. It's one of the best vista sites of Arizona, I think we have.
You know, even in today's Arizona Republic, the Discover Arizona section, they have, I think, four or five loops, but they're all White Mountain loops, Alpine, Hannigan Meadow, Pine Top, Springerville, Eager. There are just so many great loops to be able to take in the great state of Arizona. That's why we have the Arizona Staycation, which you can only register for at rosieonthehouse.com. You want to take your, what is it, 65
Corvair? 65. Mm-hmm.
65 Corvair. Do you want to take your 65 Corvair? Well, that's too bad, because Sanderson Ford wants to put you in a brand new Ford for that trip. So you get over to Sanderson Ford, you pick out your vehicle, find out where you want to go. We're going to talk a little bit more about that to encourage you. For the rest of the show, we've got the Outdoor Living Hour coming up with John J. Harper. And, Romy, you spent all day at the Shade Council earlier this week. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking open line. We'll be talking about painting. You stay tuned to Rosie on the House on Saturday mornings. And we have your house in good enough shape. You can jump in that GT Mustang convertible and take a road trip.
They can loan me one of those.
They can loan you one. if we arrange you to win a staycation, you try a...
The 5.0 with the special shark-looking features on stuff, the GT, yes. That's a pretty car.
That's one of the best-looking cars on the road, I think. I mean, that's and then you put it in a convertible, and it becomes the most irresistible car on the road.
Then I'm not sure I could get my wife out of it once she's in it. I have to go in and buy one.
Now, what kind of horsepower do you push in that Corvair?
The model engines are rated about 110 or 140 horsepower, depending upon your carburation setups on them.
Okay.
Turbocharged at 180.
Dr. Dean in his 1965 Corvair here at Rosie on the House. We'll be back, y'all, with a little bit more with Dr. Dean right after this.